Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Did we lose Glenn?
Glenn left the room.
All right, well, I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 10th, 2012, episode 506. Good morning, Horse World. And Jennifer, this is when Glenn plays music. Can you play it?
I'm working on it. I didn't have it up.
Me neither.
Hey, let's get back.
What did he
try?
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man. It's only all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey. It's a hey.
Well, I'm back.
Wow.
That was ill-timed.
That was great.
Yeah,
that was perfect,
off.
Actually.
It might be one of those days. We'll see how it goes today. We're going to think positive. Yesterday was one of those days for a lot of people, but everybody I talked to yesterday was having one of those days. But except for that woman. Did you hear about that woman in California? Who, she's a grandma, and she's from Dixon, California, and apparently she grows marijuana legally in her backyard. They have legal marijuana out there, and she's one of the growers. And she went to answer the door the other day, and there were 13 criminals waiting at the door, one with a shotgun pointed at her face. And they were 13 guys. You know, this guy with a shotgun pointed at her face, demanding that she turn. Now, this is a disabled grandma, demanding that she turn over her marijuana plants. Well, she wasn't having none of that. Apparently, when she started growing, she said, I'm not going to let anybody take my income from my family away from me. And she was probably not Southern from California, but anyway. while they apparently were distracted, I don't know what they were distracted at, she grabbed a can of bear spray that she keeps right by the door, and she unhitched the safety, and she proceeded to spray them all in the face. At which point, apparently, they, including the guy with the shotgun, and apparently at that point, they all turned around and ran. So this disabled grandma fought off 13 crooks ready to steal her marijuana plant.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, let me get back to they were distracted. They were high. Okay. So when you say they were distracted, they saw a fly.
Yeah, but when you have a high shotgun, that's not going good to you.
Hey, Glenn, you're going to have to call back, and you're going to have to let Jennifer and I discuss this one. Okay, Jennifer, let's say that you are a medical marijuana grower. Who are the kind of people that are going to come to your door to try to steal your pot plants? And what are they going to do? Go cut them down and take them home and then dry them? I don't know what kind of goes along with that, but who's the kind of person that's going to come?
Well, let's see here. In an early morning knock on your door, it's probably not the cable guy. It's probably not, statistically speaking, the Publisher's Clearinghouse Prize Patrol.
Nope.
I think we can narrow it down pretty much to drug dealers and drug buyers. Yeah, pretty much.
sorts of things. Would you answer the door? Especially when you peeked through your little peephole and you saw somebody with a shotgun and a bunch of dudes that were so stoned that they couldn't hardly find their feet.
I want to know what part of California this granny lives in that she keeps bear spray near the door.
Oh, she said she kept that at the door to fend away crooks. That was her.
She kept it there for that purpose. The crooks is what it was.
Well, apparently you grow marijuana, you expect crooks. I don't know.
It's going to be on the list of OSHA's top 10 most dangerous occupations, marijuana growers.
Yes. She said she's going to give it up now because she doesn't want to jeopardize the safety of her grandchildren, so she's going to stop growing marijuana in the backyard.
Oh, poor thing. But again, don't answer the door. You know, if they're going to be polite enough to knock because they're so high, they're like, hey, let's knock on this old lady's door and then we'll kill her. Don't answer. Just call the cops. When you look through your little peephole and you see somebody with a shotgun, I don't answer the door. Would you? No, I don't think so. You know what she should do is what I did and put a sign that says no solicitors or witnessing outside of your door, and then maybe no criminals trying to steal my pot. Like a sign at the door, be like, yeah, we want in. I'm sorry, you have to read the sign. I'm sorry, nobody has guns. There's a sign. Anyway, let's move on, shall we?
Anyway, let's get on with the show. Jennifer.
On today's Crappy List Wednesday edition, witty one-liners, hilarious headlines, and another crappy list provides the extended laugh track for this week's hump day. And the Horse.com's Horse Health Report ponies up with an inspection of that fluoroscopic friend of lame horse owners everywhere, the radiograph.
Very good.
That's it.
Thanks, Jennifer. Can you guys hear me now? Am I okay? Can you hear me now? Is it better?
Yeah, you're kind of a mess. If this happens again,
you're
done.
No, you're not
Jennifer
okay, but we can hear you. Yeah.
Good point.
Well, I got two daily Winnies today. Actually, I'll put them all in one. There are two happy birthdays today. One to Shay Moran, of course, who is our listener, who we play her music with the Rigel Band, her fiddle. And also, eventer Sinead Halpin. It's her birthday today, too, so they get this.
All right, so if anybody is looking for their next future event horse, or maybe future meaning you just have to bring it over here because it's ready to go, I would say you're going to have some time to waste at work. You know what? I'm not looking for my next event horse, and I've already spent pretty much all the time I was supposed to gather news this morning. Glenn, looking at these horses that are for sale, it is Germany's 8th annual top event horse auction, and it's taking place at Lemulen on November 10th. There are 22 horses between the ages of 4 and 6, all of which have been given the rating of exquisite by the auction organizers, and they're going to be presented for sale, and it's going to happen again on November 10th. Oh, my God, these horses are amazing. Now, we can post the link. Jennifer, can you get the link out of that site and post that on our Facebook page? Because
Sure. This
is what you're going to do for the rest of the day. And it's what I did pretty much all morning long, is search these horses out for your next amazing horse. Now, they've got photos and then videos of these horses doing some dressage, then doing some cross country and some stadium. And I would like to go ahead and put my vote in for Effie Briest, is going to be one of my next event horses, and then Salito. Salito and Effie Briest. Jennifer, did you find one that you liked?
Yes, my pick is number 11, Verona, which I know nothing about because it's all in German. But boy, she's pretty.
You could get mare out of it, that's for sure.
I did like
the number 2, Charlotte Amelie, but, you know, I just am not a mare person. So I'm going to have to go with the geldings. That's kind of a make or break. It's really difficult to have a mare at my farm. So I'm going to have to lay off Charlotte and go with one of the other geldings. And that's why I'm not buying Charlotte. That's why.
It's got nothing to do with the $40,000 it would take to buy the horse and the $35,000 that it would take to ship it over here. It's got nothing
peanuts
to do with that.
Peanuts. Okay. Well, I'm playing the lottery this week. It could happen. I also like Easy Man. There's also a horse named Richness in Space, which I think would really fit in well on the property, Castella. So, I mean, it's unlimited. So if we can go ahead and post that on Facebook, and then you ladies can go ahead and spend your time doing something other than work. We like it. All right, I have another.
I like number 16, Delilah, because it's all black. You know how I'm partial to black ones. All black. Like Delilah.
That is really not why we, you know, we don't pick race horses because of the names, and then we don't pick horses because of color, Glenn. We know that. We've learned that.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't do that at all.
If you go to horsenation.com, you will see some new fashion trends that are coming into style. And, you know, I'm using finger quotes, new fashion trends. And you know what they are? Full seat riding breeches or riding breeches with the knee patches. And there are all these supermodels that are wearing these ridiculous, although be it, very useful looking riding pants, but there's like the full seat riding pants that they have are actually backwards. The full seat actually comes in the front and not the back. So they've got them on a little bit backwards, and I wish I could tell them that. But if you go to horsenation.com, it's right there. Breeches are a street fashion trend. And you know who gets my daily Winnie is Taylor Swift, because she was spotted walking
That's
down the street. I know, right? She was spotted walking on the street in riding pants. And, you know, I thought one time when I saw a woman in riding breeches at a barn with high heels on that it was – she was a pioneer. I had no idea. I thought she was just crazy. But, no, turns out she is a pioneer of fashion.
Okay, that first picture they have on there that says the riding pant is kind of disturbing because they have what looks like a 12-year-old girl in riding pants with no top on and blacked out.
Yes, that is disturbing. I don't know why they would show a 12-year-old girl sitting there naked with riding pants on. You are correct.
Now, why couldn't they have just put a top on her? I mean, great. That's
it's
disturbing.
Fashion, Glenn. It's art.
That's
it's
by
art.
American Apparel. And, wow.
And then I love the fact that they posted the next one is has a sensible crop top, which is basically a sports bra. So... Anyway, they're fantastic. You can go ahead and find your next pair of riding pants from, what is this, D2 is the makers. And Dolce & Gabbana, they now have some as well. And so you can pretty much just go to any runway in New York and pick out your next show clothes.
Yeah, very functional, I'm sure. With a cool seat in the front.
I'm sure. Hey, I got to tell you, Glenn, I'm a little bit distracted because, you know, I'm doing my second training level horse trial this weekend. And I've got to tell you that my heart rate right now is about 160 because somebody posted my cross-country course on mycoursewalk.com. And I now can see what my cross-country course is and also see what the jumps are going to be. And I went schooling there a couple weeks ago, and I was hoping that there were going to be a couple jumps that were not incorporated into my course, and they are there. And I'm not happy about it. Like the coffin, there's a coffin, there's a corner, there's logs into water, so I have to jump over a log and land in water, and I didn't even get to school that water. Okay. I got to get myself together. I'm nervous, and it's Wednesday, and I don't ride till Saturday.
And your hubby isn't going to be able to go along in this one. You're on your own, aren't you?
You know what's really bad is my husband is not going to be at this one because he's in Alaska, and what's even worse is my father is going to be there.
That
Oh, always adds pressure, and not pressure because he wants me to be competitive and do well. Let me just mention that I am in like a week and a half. I'm going to be 35 years old. 35 years old. I own a farm. I ride horses every day. Every day. I yesterday was going to take a little girl on a trail ride. She's like 12 years old. We're going on a trail ride, and my dad comes out. Be careful, Jamie, be careful. Like, Dad, you got to get over this, my friend. I do this every day. I don't need to be told to be careful, but thank you. Have a nice one. See you later. Do they ever get over that?
Actually,
do parents ever get over it?
No. It's going to happen forever. They don't change after they're 20. I'm actually looking at your course here on mycoursewalk.com. I like the number six jump. You should do very well at, by the way, just
what's
by the name.
Called?
I'm saying you should do very well. It's called 5 o'clock somewhere, and you've lived by that your entire life. So that should be a good, easy one for you.
I think
see what else.
I
log roll, water out.
Good.
Mine shaft. Juniper squeeze. Ooh, juniper. Good. Corner. Look, they gave you that one. You're right. That one just has the name. That name says it all. It's just a corner.
Yeah.
Straw stack.
Thanks.
Half coffin. Irish bank. Ooh. You got the half coffin followed by the Irish bank. That's always fun. And, yeah. You are going to be wearing your vest, right?
I will be wearing the Charles Owen cross-country vest underneath my .2 air vest, which is also with my super helmet. And, so I'll be ready. I'm actually going to wear my American red, white, and blue American flag helmet on cross-country that I won from Horse Nation.
This is a really neat website, isn't it? It even gives you the distances between the fences. That's really cool.
I know. They do the minute markers and everything.
It's really nice. Yeah, this is a cool website. Very good. Somebody obviously put some time and effort into this one.
I would like to point out that when they say the half coffin, what the coffin jump is it's a ditch. And I schooled this particular half coffin, and there ain't nothing half about it. Let me just tell you that. It is a full-on, huge-ass ditch that you've got to jump. I don't know why they even bought you're only going to be half dead after you fall into it. Is that what it is? Like, my God, seriously. There ain't no half coffin. Take that and shove it.
That's funny. Well, that means Jamie is not going to be here on Friday. And actually, we have a guest co-host on Friday. Darlie from Equitrekking is going to be here, and she's going to be here talking about a new website she put out and spending the show with us, and she's getting some guests on from she just did a new website about ranches in the United States, and we're going to have a couple of guests, I think, from some of the ranches around the United States, so she'll be here filling in, which means no really bad ads this week. We'll get back to that again next week, but Jamie has to head out. You have to head out really early on Friday, don't you?
Yes, because, I'm doing my second training level, and that's cool and everything. But what I think most excited about is my student, Rachel, who has been with me for 4.5 years. I finally converted her to an eventer, and she's taking Jacob the Tiny Pony to his first ever horse trial. Now, she's going pre-comp, which is a 2-foot version of a horse trial. So it's nice and small and a nice intro to horse trials for them. And so I think I'm more excited about her getting to go than even me. You know, it's like my little girl's growing up kind of thing. It's awesome.
Well, that helps you keep your mind off yourself, too, when you have somebody going along and they have to coach. That always helps.
Yeah,
helps
that's
you
great.
Out.
I get to be even more nervous for other people. That's fun.
Hey, I got you can do in the
ever,
off season. You're good.
Oh,
go ahead. Sorry, step in.
I was just going to say, do you ever stop getting nervous at a horse show, Jennifer? Do you ever stop getting nervous at a horse trial?
No.
Oh,
absolutely not. And the worst thing in the world is as you move up the divisions, you ride later and later in the day. Can they please, please, please put my division first thing in the morning? Because, man, it just builds all day long. And by the time you ride your dressage test at 10 o'clock in the morning, you just, you're a puddle of nerves. It's awful.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't eat before I ride. I don't know why. I just get so nervous I can't eat. And then when you ride at 2 in the afternoon, you about pass out.
Yeah, you have a little weak in the knees.
Okay. all right. Thanks
I was doing
so
that
for
praying in my time.
Thanks, Jen. That's fun. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, I got something for you to do in your off season. When you're,
okay.
You know, when there's no events and, you know, it's coming up, you're going to have some dry time here for a couple months. I think you should train for something called, that's coming to Arizona, called the Super Spartan Obstacle Race. And, you know, it's just a little race of 8 miles with 20 obstacles. And it says a battlefield of insane mud running with 15 or more obstacles to test your physical strength and mental resolve. This mud fest of a race will have many trials to push you to your limits that any man or woman will resolve, with resolve can complete. This endurance race consists of mud runs, trails, and both mental and physical obstacles. Now, I watched the video for this, and this statement that they have here is understating it a lot. I mean, you're crawling through mud. You're doing things you see the special forces doing. They have guys with big sticks with big padded things in the end beating you along the way and trying to knock you over. You're climbing walls, and you're just covered in mud. And you're doing 8 miles and 20 obstacles of that. It's sort of like your own little cross-country course, only there's no horse, just you.
Okay, that sounds awful. How
well,
long is the entire thing?
8 miles. So the good news is after you complete your painful journey, there will be live music and a catered meal to soothe your aching joints. And you want to know what the really good news is? The really good news is for doing all of that and just about killing yourself, you get the top three males and the top three females get to compete in the Spartan Beast. Now, the Spartan Beast is actually bigger than that even. It's like 20 miles with 25 obstacles, and they call it the Obstacle Race from Hell. So there you go. If you win, you get to go do the other one.
Oh, my God. No thanks. So basically what you're saying is that you get to get beat up, covered in mud, and run 8 miles. You know, I get a pebble in my shoe for 10 steps, and I've got a blister. Can you imagine the chafing that goes on being covered in mud and running 8 miles?
This obstacle race is becoming hugely popular in the United States now. It was started by a couple of endurance racers, who do, you know, the crazy guys that do 250 miles or whatever, and they were bored with that. So, and the, you know, triathlons weren't challenging anymore. So these three guys started these obstacle races along with a special forces guy from England. And now they've become hugely popular all across the country. Not for me, thank you very much. I won't be running in any Spartan races anytime soon.
No, and they call them, I think, also the mud runs. And they're very popular with the military guys that Chad is friends with. I say Chad is friends. Chad's friends are interested in it. There's no way my husband would do that. No way. He doesn't care. he doesn't need to do that. He's got nothing to prove. But he goes.
I don't know if they'd let him
the
do it. He's a major and an F-16 fighter pilot. They have large insurance policy on him. I don't think they want him doing that. They probably,
maybe
it's against
why.
His contract or something. Hey, I got a list for you, Glenn's crappy list for this Wednesday. I see a couple comments on Facebook, people waiting to hear it. So let's make sure we get it in before our first guest. This was taken from a website, and it was the smartest and dumbest dogs. Now, this is not a list that Jamie and I put together. I got it off this website. And now it said smartest dog breeds depends on what defines a smart dog. Is the ability to wrap people around their claws who get in their way, or, you know, the smart ones are the ones who get whatever they want, you know, that kind of thing. But they apparently did this study and determined what were the smartest and dumbest dog breeds. Now, do you have any guesses, Jamie, what the smartest dog breeds would be?
Well, I have two English Shepherds, and I'm not putting them on the top of the list. However, I would say that I have had the pleasure of having border collies in the past, and those have got to be the smartest dogs.
Absolutely right. Ding, 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 ding. Number one on the list is the border collie. And I think everybody would agree with that. I don't think anybody's going to argue with the border collies are just smart dogs.
Too smart.
Nobody's
going to. Too smart.
Yeah, exactly. So they are number one on the list. Also on the list of the smartest breeds are the Australian Elpiee. That's a new one on me. I don't know anything about
it. Say that again, Glenn.
Kelpie. Kelpie. I don't know what an Australian Kelpie is. The poodle, believe it or not, is on the smartest list.
Yeah. I've seen that before. I would like to say that before you go on, my English shepherds are very closely related to the border collie. But Zenyatta is definitely smarter than her brother, who's kind of an idiot boomer. But Zenyatta is only half smart, because here's what she does, and this is great when it's about 117 degrees outside, and you put them outside and say, I'm going to feed. Well, Zenyatta decides that she's ready to come back in, and so she goes to the back and she opens the door. She actually knows how to jump up on the door, grab the handle, pull the handle down, and push the door in. You would think that would be very smart, right? That sounds pretty smart. Well, she doesn't know how to close the door. So that's the problem with the smart dogs only being kind of smart, because then they don't know how to close the door as well. So, Jennifer, are you there? What? Hello?
Hello,
Jennifer.
I'm back. I had to go find Frankie. Frankie was hanging out over there in Listen to the Whole Music Land, and I hear Glenn's left the room again.
Yes, he has. I'm getting sick of this. Glenn is gone again from the show. So let's go ahead and get Frankie on, shall we? And we'll finish the list of smart and dumb dogs a little bit later. So, Frankie, are you there?
Doing.
Let's see. There he is.
Yeah. Frankie Lovato from jockeyworld.net. Of course, Frankie has his own show, so he still graces us with his presence every now and then. Frankie, good morning.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you today?
Doing fantastic. What is going on in Frankie the former jockey's world right now?
Well, with all the Jockey World projects, and, you know, there's Jockey Camp, we have Jockey World Radio, and the Jockey World Academy. These are all programs I created to help with education, which includes health and safety tips for mostly youth, kids, but it's all ages that want to get into horse racing, career building tools, things that that just kind of give the guidance to help them make the right decisions, get started, and horsemanship skills, all kinds of things.
And
like
this
that.
Is the jockey school you're talking about?
Well, no, it's not really a school. It's just it's a network, and it's a website, which it's jockeyworld.net, but I've also applied for a 501c3 nonprofit. So we're changing over to jockeyworld.org. So you may see both domains go to the website, but it's like a Facebook, but for people with interest in horse racing and learning more. And then that's like the mothership, and then off of that is where it's the where Jockey Camp and Jockey World Academy and Jockey World Radio all can be accessed. It's just a part of the whole big picture.
So basically, this keeps you incredibly busy, it sounds like. And congratulations when you get that 501c3, man. That's going to be fantastic. And it kind of – will that legitimize it a little bit for everybody around you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things, just like any organization, it's the kind of thing that – you know, this is something I've been doing for years, Jamie, and never – it's very time-consuming. And all these tools were to save me time and also – put the information out there where it's accessible, easily accessible for those that are interested in getting into horse racing or just wanting to learn more, like I said. But the idea was to actually be more less time-consuming for me, but establish these tools where they're always there in place and they're always accessible. with becoming a nonprofit, these things take a lot of hours, and of course they cost money, just like you guys know. Having a radio show and hosting a website and maintaining, you know, it's like I need helpers, and it's a passion that I do it, but it costs me money to do it. So I thought it would definitely set it up properly and hopefully can create enough funds to sustain it and maybe even get me some help.
Frankie, I can't believe it's been over a year now since you've been doing the radio show. It seems like it just started.
Yeah, Glenn, we did episode 70 just this past week, and even I'm like, wow, it's really flown by, and it's a weekly radio show, and if anybody's interested, you can get to it through the domain of jockeyworldradio.com if they want to see what it's all about. But, you know, like this show, it's hosted on Blog Talk Radio, so it's an internet-based radio show, and every show is archived. It's numbered and archived. And many of the shows that we do are educational, and, you know, a chance for if someone had something that they wanted to learn about horse racing, this is a good chance they can scroll through the archives and find something they may find very interesting in horse racing.
You know, I think it's changed a little, too, since you started it. When you started, you had told me that you really wanted it to be about the young jockeys and things, and I think you've actually covered a lot more than that on the show and had a lot more of the big-name guests and jockeys and riders and really have branched out a little bit with the show, at least from what it appears from the outside.
Yeah, and that's true, because when I started, the whole concept of what Jockey World is was kids that wanted to be specifically jockeys. And what I found that there's kids that are maybe too big and they want to be exercise riders or trainers or barn foremen or just have a passion for the sport, such as you and Jamie, you know, and sometimes it's fun to hear what a jockey has to say about a specific race or horse or event. So that's kind of where the radio show has taken us.
Well, of course, we got the Breeders' Cup coming up, Frankie, big time.
That's right. I mean, there's so many big races. These prep races are happening every weekend as it closes in, and some amazing racing going on around the country. Oh, well, and around the world for that matter. But yeah, it's coming up pretty close. Breeders' Cup is sneaking up on us.
Now, Frankie, the Breeders' Cup, I think, is going to be a little bit more interesting this year because we're not going to see all the guys that we saw in the spring running the Triple Crown races. I mean, I don't think we're going to have any of the winners that are going to be even second-place runners in the Breeders' Cup this year. Are you a little bit surprised on kind of how this year has turned out?
You know, it was one of those years that a lot of those major players, those three-year-olds that we watched campaign through the Triple Crown and into some of the larger summer events like the Haskell and Travers. I mean, there a lot of these horses have been, you know, a little bit more than usual, sidelined. Painter, for example, so many of us were very excited to see how he progressed because he was so young into his career, but nearly won the Belmont Stakes. And he contracted that virus, or I'm not
right.
Sure the details,
yeah.
But I mean, he barely survived and is still, you know, under his career is over. But it wasn't an injury; it was because he got sick. But there's a list of them, a bunch of 3-year-olds that little injuries. Some of them were major, some were career ending, but some of them weren't. That just taken them out of the picture, and then a horse like Doolahan who threw in a clunker the other day. Where people are thinking, well, maybe he's going to be, a highlight coming into the Breeders' Cup. There's just, it's kind of like, you know, there's no Zenyatta, unfortunately.
yes.
But there is. There is some horses that definitely watch. It's just going to be different. Everybody's shifting. Who are they looking out for? Who are they going to be betting or rooting for these classics coming up?
So when you say there's no Zenyatta, you know, there's this horse that they've got over in England that they keep saying he's the fastest horse in the world and he's the best horse in history. Do you agree with that?
I think, you know, I'm not going to, I'm certainly not going to disagree with it, but, you know, it's
obviously Frankel is who we're talking about, you guys,
yeah.
Frankel.
And you know, I got that.
Yeah,
I know who you were talking
let
about.
Let the listeners know. Listeners, yeah, I know you know.
So, yeah, so, you know, to really test this horse to see where he's at, not that he needs to come here, but, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's been running against the same groups of horses, same circles, same type of conditions, courses. It would be interesting to see him, and it doesn't necessarily mean Breeders' Cup, but that would be, you know, that would be like, you know, that would be a really good test to see how great Frankel really is. A lot of those races in Europe, they set up very differently. Wide open spaces, they're on the turf. You know, there's other challenges when you bring certain elements to here, like in the States, where we're going to turn left, our tracks, the turns are a little sharper. There's going to be tight conditions. Horses are going to be covered up. A lot of dirt kicked in their face, perhaps, you know, and it does create a whole different element, which could take a horse like Frankel out of his element. You know, with that being said,
so,
I really don't know.
Yeah, no, well, I was just curious, too, because they keep saying he's the highest-rated racehorse, highest-rated with a number of, like, 146 or something. And I know that's impressive, but I don't know, I guess, if you could help me answer the question, how do they come up with that? Do they clock him, like, miles per hour or what?
I think it's a bunch of variables that they – I know here in the States what they'll use is, like, buyer numbers, figures, speed figures.
Uh-huh.
Dosages and all that, they take all these things in consideration, the track condition, the air, the previous races run that day, the day before, the day after. They put all these things in and calculate how fast that horse actually ran on that moment at that time, or maybe from that post position. There's just a bunch of different elements, so many things that will make your eyes spin, but they come up with a number
yeah.
from it.
You know, sounds like a lot of math. A lot of math.
Definitely a lot of math.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely, it's just my like, if I was a dog, my hackles kind of go up, you know, when they keep talking. I mean, he's an amazing racehorse. Don't get me wrong. The horse, I mean, I would give anything to see him run. But when you say that he's the greatest racehorse of all time, I take offense to that because, you know, I am the biggest fan of Zenyatta in the world. And, you know, we've had some pretty darn amazing horses here in the U.S., like, I don't know, Secretariat, Manowar, those horses. So when they say the
yeah.
greatest racehorse in the world, I'm like, that's because somebody did a math problem and figured out that he was fat.
Yeah.
And the Australians think that black caviar is. So,
yeah.
you know, you got that, too. I think we all kind of root for our own. Hey, Frankie, I just bought something from you the other day because you're doing a little fundraiser for your organization right now.
Yes, sir. You're a proud owner of a Jockey World mug.
I know, a Jockey World mug. I haven't gotten it yet, but I'll have it right here on my desk. I'll use it every day, proudly.
And I'll be very proud of that. And it doesn't matter what you put in it, Glenn. That's the key element. You know what? Actually, we're doing this fundraiser, and if anybody's interested, we are selling these mugs as a way to just raise some funds to help, you know, cover some of our expenses, and we thought it was really cool, and we, you know, it's kind of a cool thing to have your own mug, you know. Well, anyway, you don't know how many people said that, but I don't drink coffee. Like, you don't have to put coffee in it. You know, it could be chocolate milk, it could be hot chocolate,
whiskey,
and, you know,
it doesn't matter. Yeah, bourbon. You can put anything you want in your Jockey World mug.
Pencils.
You can put
for that.
It on your desk and put your pencils in it. Exactly.
That's
right. Got a mug sitting here doing the same thing. I get it.
But you know that, you know, it's funny. But you know, have someone.
Where can people get those? Where can people get them?
Well, if they're interested, the easiest way is to go to jockeyworld.org on our homepage, and there's a banner. And the banner is like a thermometer that shows how many mugs we've sold so far and our goal. But there's a link there that they can click. We'll take them right to the the information and purchase page, and it's a PayPal purchase, or they could send a check or money.
You know what, Jamie, too? These things are cheap. They're $9.95 or $9.99
yeah.
for a month. You know, that's pretty cheap, actually.
Yeah. We're not going to make a lot from this fundraiser, but you know what we do have, Glenn, and it wasn't my idea. It was some of our supporters said, well, why don't you have a collector series that you actually autograph and number, and then we made the price. Not, I think it's $19.99 for that.
I bought
one.
The wrong one. I should have bought that one. I didn't see that.
Well, I'll get Popcorn to sign yours, Glenn.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And put his little stamp of approval on it. He'll put something in the cup for you.
Yeah.
Love it.
But we also have, you could buy a set of two or a set of four as well. So, you know, that's another way. We're just trying to generate some funds. But the collector's mug is a alternative if someone really wants to be generous and kick in an extra $10 that'll go towards our expenses.
I have a question for you that's a serious question now. We do encourage everybody to go over to jockeyworld.org and buy a mug for Frankie's sake. But I do have one more question for you. Why haven't Jamie and I, the experts at racing in this country, mm-hmm. been invited on your show yet?
Oh, my goodness. Wow, boy, you sure got me in the corner.
Frankie, let me help you here. I'm going to go ahead and answer that question for you, Glenn, because you're not an expert in racing, and neither am I, okay? Just
yeah,
because
we're
fans.
That is true. Nobody wants to, no prospective jockeys or people listening to an actual show about racing certainly want to hear Jamie or I.
Oh, well,
no.
You know, I think that they would love to hear you and Jamie for your professionalism. But
right.
So,
now you're just being mean. Now you're being mean.
Well, no, seriously, I don't think we're ready for you yet. Jamie, and I mean that to Glenn.
Okay.
I'm winking and pointing at Glenn right now. I'm like, as if he was sitting here next to me, I'd be winking and pointing.
Can you come back on before the end of the month and talk Breeders' Cup with us a little bit more?
Absolutely. I would love to.
All right. Very good, Frankie. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. And again, it's jockeyworld.org, right?
Yes, sir. That's where they can find us. And there they can see everything we do, our homepage. We have a lot of our members are mostly kids, and it's interactive. They can we have members that write columns on horses. We have Horse of the Month, Jockey, Trainer, Owners of the Month, and then we have our Jockey World Radio page. We have videos that we make that are educational, and everything is to help offer the guidance and tools for anyone that wants to get into or learn more about horse racing.
I love it. I'm actually on here on their website right now, Glenn, and do you know who Jockey World, they do like Horse of the Month, Trainer of the Month, and guess who their Owner of the Month is?
Who?
Reeves Thoroughbred Racing, Patty and Dean Reeves, who we have on all the time. So congratulations to them. Did they get a free mug because they were Owner of the Month?
There goes the proceeds. Wait, what do I say to that? What do I say, Jamie? Of course.
Of course.
It's in the mail.
That's what you say.
It's in the mail.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Frankie. We will talk to you again later on this month to talk about Breeders' Cup, but you have a great day, and good luck selling those mugs. Everybody, jockeyworld.org. Check it out.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Frankie.
Right.
Bye-bye.
And I did get a report from our adopted bug, Callie, who is the jockey in training that we were following, who broke her leg in three places a little while back while in New York. And I heard from her yesterday that she had another doctor visit, and all is good. It is healing well. However, she was told another 4 to 6 weeks on crutches, so, and with her cast. So it is
okay,
healing well, but she's out for a while.
Do you think that she's going to go right back into riding?
Yeah,
race
I think
horses?
So, because she said that she's going to head down to Florida because they train down in southern Florida over the winter, and she was going to stop here on her way down. So she is planning on doing it as soon as she can get back into, as soon as she can get the doctor's clearance. she said she'll be able to ride horses before she's going to be able to ride thoroughbreds. She's, you know, it's a two-step process. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. Well, let's finish this list quick before we get into our commercial and song and thehorse.com. Sorry about that. I kept getting cut off. I called back on the phone. I'm now on the phone and gave up on the internet this morning. We have the German Shepherd on the list of the smartest dog breeds. I think everybody probably agrees with that. The Golden Retriever. I never thought of them. I thought of them as sweet dogs, family dogs. I never quite thought of them as super smart dogs.
That's a little surprising. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, yeah. Doberman Pinscher, apparently, you know, used for guard dogs everywhere, so they were on the smart list. The Shetland Sheepdog. Now, is that the same thing as a Sheltie, by the way?
No, the Shetland Sheepdog is that huge one that's super hairy with all the hair hanging down in his face.
Oh, that's good. Because my parents owned a Sheltie, and it was the dumbest dog ever. So I was going to disagree with that one. I'm glad to hear that.
Hold on. Shetland Sheep. What'd you call it?
A Sheltie.
Yeah. Oh, so it is a Sheltie then. Okay, you're right. Well, then it is a Sheltie. Yeah. We're noticing a trend.
English Sheepdog, isn't it?
An English Sheepdog. Anyway, a Papillon, which... surprised. That's that tiny little dog that barks a lot. I was really surprised about the Papillon. A Belgian Malinois?
Okay. Those Belgian Malinois are the ones that will, they've got them here at Luke Air Force Base, and I don't know what the word is, but it's a magic word, and if you say that magic word, they'll kill you. they'll kill you. So... it's a really smart dog. Hopefully they don't get confused and start to lose their hearing and hear some word that's not really the word, because then they'll just go kill people. And they're awesome. They're like kind of like German Shepherds, but tougher.
Oh, okay. And then the Labrador Retriever.
They can be smart. I think that the Labrador Retriever and the Golden Retriever, both of those, I don't know about the Papillon, but it's probably breeding. And responsible breeding. You just never know who's a backyard breeder and who's not, who's crossing mama with daddy a little too close with the aunt and the uncle. You know what I mean?
Well, let's do here real quick. The dogs that are, well, the way they put it is the breed often accused of being most likely to be held back a grade.
Let me guess.
Okay.
Go ahead. And this is, I'm taking this from the horse world. A lot of times when you breed for color, you sacrifice other parts of the horse or the dog in this case. So I'm going to go with Dalmatian.
No, not on the bottom list.
Not on the bottom. This list is crap. Okay, let's see. Another really, really dumb dog.
I got one.
Go.
Irish Setter.
Not on the bottom list either, although I would tend to agree with you there.
Super happy dog. Not the smartest. Well, I don't know. We're 0 for 2. So, Glenn, let's start with 10 and work your way back up to 1.
I only have like 7 of them here. The Afghan Hound is on the list.
Yeah,
not real bright dog. Basenjis. We knew a Basenji. We knew somebody had a Basenji, didn't we, Jennifer?
Yes,
sure.
We did.
Yeah.
I like the Jeffies.
Now, there's going to be a lot of hate mail about this one because there's people that have these just love their dogs, and that's the bulldog. But you have to admit, when you look at a bulldog, you don't think bright. You don't think real smart. You just look at them and go, you just don't think high-grade level with a bulldog.
Well, they don't need to be smart. You know what? Bulldogs can't even have babies without getting C-sections. So you got to think... God did not intend for them to be here. Okay, if they have to have assisted birth, then yes, and you have to wipe their butt. So not the greatest. Now I was thinking when you said that we were going to get hate mail, I was thinking you were going to go with the Corgi because we have more Corgi owner listeners than you could shake a stick at. Please do not tell me they're on the list.
No, they must be somewhere in the middle, because that and Jack Russells are not on the list. I did look at that first because everybody, you know, practically everybody either has a Corgi or a Jack Russell in the horse world, and they apparently are in the middle. They're like average dogs. Now, you're going to see a trend here, though. We got the Bulldog, you know, which kind of has a face, and then the Chow Chow, which even has more of a face, is also on the dumb list. Borzoi is on the dumb list. Don't know too many people with Borzois. Then the Bloodhound is on the dumb list. Now, there is the Bloodhound is used to track people and save lives. I don't know why it's on the dumb list.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare say the Basset Hound made the list.
No, the Basset Hound must be on the average intelligence list, because it's not on this list. But the last one on the dumb list is the Pekingese. And we had a half Pomeranian, half Pekingese one time for about 12 years. And he was not the brightest dog. So I kind of, he was cute and he was sweet and he would do anything for you, but boy, he didn't have a whole lot of brain cells. So
Glenn, you've got that all wrong. Dog would do nothing for you. That dog would do anything for himself. He was the most self-centered little you-know-what ever.
It's true, actually. So there's your list of the smartest and dumbest dogs. And now we have to get on with the show here. We're going to take a break for question collections. And then I thought, seeing Frankie was on the show, we haven't played this song in a long time.
Yay!
We're going to play A Legend in the Game by Frankie Lovato, all about, do you remember what horse?
Legend in the Game, is that Barbaro?
No, he wrote it because he was trying to get this song in the Seabiscuit movie.
Oh.
So this is all about Seabiscuit coming right up, and we're going to be back with the horse talking about radiographs.
Hi, Glenn here with the Horse Radio Network, and I'm here with Debbie from Equestrian Collections. What are we talking about today, Debbie?
Hi, Glenn. Today we're going to be talking about our Equestrian Collections Facebook page. I hope all of your listeners know that we have a big presence on Facebook. You can find us by just putting Equestrian Collections in your search box. We have a lot of things going on there. We have contests on there. We have announcements of things that are happening in the horse world. If we find something that think our customers will be interested in, we'll post that. You can interactively speak with us on Facebook. You can interactively speak with each other on Facebook. You can talk about products. You can talk about your horse. You can enter contests. It's a very vital part of our company, and we're on there every day. So we look forward to hearing people talk to us on our Facebook page.
Very good. And I know we post our shows on there. You can actually listen to some of the Horse Radio Network shows on the Equestrian Collections Facebook page as well. And we appreciate that. You can find it by going searching for Equestrian Collections on Facebook.
What they claim, this is the story to the scene.
And you heard it here first, okay, before it's going to be some super huge smash hit in the next horse movie. That is Frankie Lovato, legend in the game. And, Glenn, I want you to look at Facebook because I posted something, again, from Horse Nation. They are on top of it today. And it is a, you know, they do these comics called The Idea of Order. And they're like horse comics written by a horse woman. And they're really cute illustrations. Well, the illustrator let her fiancé do the comic. And so you've got to go on and look at this. Look at the comic written by the fiancé. For those who are not playing along at home, I'll just read it to you. It's a stick figure. And the stick figure says, "Hey, boyfriend, tomorrow's my day off. We can do all sorts of fun things together." And then the next stick figure with the ponytail, "Just have to stop by the barn and do, like, one thing. Just one thing, really." And then the next stick figure with the ponytail, "All I have to do is just feed the horses, feed the ponies, shovel the poop, move the hay, shuffle the fence around, reorganize the dot, 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 dot." And then the next one, "So I will be home early, like 8:30 or 9 p.m. So, that is really early." And I love that her fiancé drew that. And he's, like she said, "I can't believe he still proposed."
You know, so this is so true. This whole thing is so true. It's just what happens to us.
Oh, my God.
And,
Chad is,
and
like,
you know, if they say,
so
if they say I have to do which one more thing in the barn, you know it's 2 hours. It's not just one more thing. There's never one more thing. It's always like 12 things.
Chad laughs. He's like, we never just can leave the house. We just can't just leave. No, what do I have to do? Well, let's see. I've got to go out. And the horses are in their stalls. I don't want them just standing there. So then I've got to break apart some hay and give them some hay. And then, this water is not very clean. I got to clean out the waterer. So you start to clean out the waterer and you realize, like, is that something? Let me just pick his feet. Let me just pick his feet real quick. You go pick the feet and you're like, is that a wire sticking out? Let me go get the wire cutters real quick. And you go over and get the wire cutters. And when you're over getting the wire cutters, you're like, there's some poop right there. I have to clean that up. And then you're like, I might as well just do all the stalls since I'm standing here with the wheelbarrow and the manure fork. I mean, my God. And then you start doing the stalls and you're like, I'm just going to turn them out. Let me just turn them all out. So when I leave, everything. And then it's like 2 hours later.
I'm having flashback nightmares right now.
I nailed it, because that is my day.
Hey, somebody else had something interesting happen the other day. Before we go to the official horse.com report today with Dr. Jones and everything, Michelle from the horse.com posted something on her Facebook page the other day, and I called her like right after that, and we gave her some advice, and I want to see what happened. So, Michelle, tell us what you posted on your Facebook page.
Well, I got out of a phone meeting with the horse.com people, and I went in to have a cup of coffee, opened up the dishwasher, and there was a Black Widow spider sitting in my dishwasher looking at me. And I saw the spider. I don't like spiders. I closed it, and I went, there was a spider in the dishwasher, and then I went, I wonder what kind it is. So I opened it back up, and I looked closer, and I definitely saw the hourglass, and then... and it's one of the things with working at home alone, like there's no one to share in my stress of that. So I got on Facebook and I didn't know what to do. Actually, I tried calling my husband, but he didn't answer his phone. So I was left alone with this Black Widow spider. But Glenn,
he paid for not answering his phone at that particular moment, didn't he?
Yes, he should have answered his phone. But Glenn, you helped me because you suggested running the dishwasher. That was completely out of the box. I hadn't thought of that. And so I did. I ran it, like, on the pots and pan heavy load and washed her away. But, yeah, no, my husband's response is, those are all over in the garage. I'm like, what? I did not know we lived. We've been here for 5 years.
Now, did it work, though? Did you get brave enough then to open it after you did pots and pan cycle with the hot water?
Well, so I have to tell you, it took me 2 days to unload the dishwasher.
Because you knew it was at the bottom of one of those plates.
I know. So I was like hand washing coffee mugs. So no, yeah. Last night, finally, my husband helped me put the dishes away. We didn't see any traces of the spider. He thinks that she crawled in from under the sink. So he said, be careful when you're under the sink. So pretty much I think it's a good excuse to not go in the kitchen at all.
Nope, no more. Honey, if you're hungry, you go get yourself something to eat, and then you put the dishes away, and you start the dishwasher, and when they're undone, you just go ahead and bring them undone. And by the way, I'm not going in the garage anymore, too, so you might as well start cleaning the garage and go ahead and take care of that. Oh, by the way, they're probably in the washing machine and dryer, too, so definitely not doing any laundry, obviously. And if you open up the closet where the broom is, there might be some in there, so I'm not sweeping anymore either, so you're in charge.
I know. That sounds, yes, great. And I have a friend just moved her horse to my place for the fall so we can ride together, and she emailed me and was like, are these spiders living in the tack room too? I'm like, I don't know.
Did you get an exterminator out yet? Did you call the bug guy yet?
I don't know. My husband said that doesn't help with spiders, but they just come back.
He's wrong.
Is he wrong?
At least he's wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, honey, I have the bug people. They come every month because the two things that we have here are scorpions and black widows. And if I see either one of those. So when we moved in, our garage was full of them, and we also had them in our laundry room. And this is the way my husband handled it. Hey, babe, don't go in the laundry room. Excuse me? First of all, okay. Second of all, why? You know, I'm like, and then he's like, there's a black widow in there. I'm like, yeah. So do you not think that they're capable of walking and just ride on out into the living room?
Or
bedroom,
jumping or
something?
Running or climbing.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, yeah.
I called the people and they came over that afternoon because I was like all freaked out. So, but then they say that they're like, you know, you have them all over the place, but then they spray them. I don't care if they come back, at least those are dead and not reproducing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, my husband reported that they were in his golf bag. He's like, oh yeah, there were four of them in my golf bag. No big deal.
Geez, I never play golf again. Are you kidding?
That's not okay, Michelle. That's not okay.
See, and I have to say, my husband's a very relaxed person. I am less relaxed than he is, so he's just like, yeah, it's nature.
No, it's not. Not in my house. Not in my house.
I know. I'm like, how did she find her way in? I don't know. So it just was not what I was expecting.
Call the exterminator today. In Florida, you live in Florida, you have to, everybody down here has their house sprayed once a month. You have to, because we have every creature imaginable. And you just have to have it sprayed, or you're just picking up you're putting on your shoes and there's one in there. And that's the other thing I worry about. I actually bang my shoes together every time I put on any pair of shoes here. Because
that, you know, that's a good thought, because I don't shake out my boots before I put them on to go out and do my horse stuff. So I should probably
do that. You have scorpions and stuff, Jamie. You must do that.
Oh, honey, I was just about to say, honey, listen, there is not a time that I do not pick up a shoe and flip it over and bang the bottom before I put it on. It does not matter. Flip-flops I look at, okay? But I got to tell you, it only takes one time.
Mm-hmm.
One time of having something in your shoe, and you'll do it for the rest of your life. And mine was bees. I had bees in my shoes back in Georgia. And I stuck my feet
your
in.
Shoes?
Yeah, I had the big tall muck boots, you know, to go outside and traipse around. And apparently the bees thought that was a nice little place to start kind of building a home. I guess it had been, you know, all summer long since I'd worn them, and fall came, and I stupidly stuck my foot in the boot. And it just takes one time, Michelle. Just one time.
Yeah, that'd get you hopping.
To avoid the one time, just go ahead and dump out your shoes.
Yeah, that, you know, I can do that. That seems like very little effort for big payback, so.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the payback right there.
Did your friend move her horse out now?
No, she's still here, so, but she hasn't been back since, so.
We're waiting for Dr. Jones, by the way. Dr. Jones is delayed a little bit. I guess she's busy right now. So we'll get to her in just a minute. So
sometimes those emergency things come up for her.
Yeah, where Jennifer
because she is a practicing vet.
Yeah, exactly. She actually does work for a living, not just talk to us on Wednesdays.
You guys really have no idea. Like she has almost practically delivered foals while she's been on the show with us without anyone knowing.
I always get
the full story afterwards.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't believe what I was doing while we were on the show.
I don't even want to know, probably. Glenn definitely doesn't want to know.
No, I definitely don't want to know. Oh, wait. But when we get Dr. Jones on here, Jennifer took some time. Remember we promised you last week that we'd have a new opener for
yes,
the segment
I'm
this week.
To
and
hear
Jennifer,
it.
Jennifer put some time into this one, and it's holiday themed. Let's just say that. So,
okay.
So we'll play that as soon as we get Dr. Jones on here in a second. Now, I didn't think that you live up in the great Northwest. I didn't think that, you know, black widows would be a big problem up there.
High desert. We're in the high desert. We're kind of that anomaly. So our Washington Post just did an article on our town saying, Bend, the city you'll love to hate, because of how how awesome and different we are than the rest of the Northwest.
Great.
Yes. But, yeah, so we don't have the wet, mushy, it's dry desert, and so we have the little scorpions and the black widow spiders. So, yeah, and nasty ants.
How did you two end up living in places like that? Jeez, I'll tell you what you'll do for your spouses is amazing.
Sunshine, 300 days of sunshine.
Is that, let me see, we get about 363. Is that why you guys live there, because your husband, or is that...
We relocated here. My husband's an architect, and at the time we were in Idaho, I was working for the Appaloosa Horse Club, and there just wasn't a lot going on for architects up in northern Idaho. So it was booming here, so he brought me here on a ski vacation, and as we were driving around, he started pointing out, like, oh, look at the horses over there, and look at the horses over there, and look, there's another horse farm, and let's get the phone book out, and look, this was back when you used phone books, and let's look at all the horse places in the phone book. I was like, wow, there's lots of horses here. And so a couple weeks later, he's like, how would you like to move there? So we did, and we love it. And
He was working it,
and I'm glad he did. You know, last weekend, my friend and I drove up into the Cascades, about 45 minutes up into the hills, and we were in the middle of nowhere enjoying the National Forest on our horses, so it's very cool to have that kind of access.
Well, Dr. Jones was here and now has dropped off. She's apparently on herself, so Jennifer's going to try and get her back here in a second. So we had her. Now she's going again. So we're going to try getting her back. It's one of those days. It's one of those days. Well, let's play the theme.
Okay.
Let's
hear it. I'm excited.
There is a fifth dimension where that which is known to horse owners and that which is most feared, albeit unlikely. It is the middle ground between go to the horse show and stall rest for 6 weeks, and it lies between the fear of insufficient cash reserves and the prelude to long-term credit card debt. It is the dimension of the horse.com, and it is the area which we call the Horse Health Report.
I love it.
I'm terrified.
It's going to cost you money no matter what.
A little Halloween there for you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Very nice, Jennifer. Very nice.
Well done.
Take it away, Jamie.
Do we actually have Dr. Jones here? Are you
Let's
here, Dr.
Out.
Jones?
Oh, there you are. That music was really getting tiring.
I know, it's awful, isn't it?
Oh, it's my awful. Goodness. It was about 2 minutes worth of it. The last time I had to hang up, it sent you that message saying, help me.
Okay,
well, I'm glad you made it so that we can talk about radiographs today, Dr. Jones. I'm glad
we'll
you're here.
We'll speed through it because I know you're short on time, but I apologize for that delay there.
Well, so the radiographs, my vet will take radiographs, and he'll look at him and he's like, oh, see this here, and there's this thing here. And he goes, do you see this? And I just shake my head, yes. I don't see anything, though. I find them extremely confusing. So can we start out by telling everyone, what is a radiograph? What, when they shoot that the camera at the leg or the hoof or wherever they're taking the radiograph, what are they getting?
Okay, first I'll tell you, they're getting bone images primarily, and that machine they're shooting is called a generator. Everybody used to call it the x-ray machine. It's really called a generator. It generates the x-ray atoms that come out, the radiation basically that's being shot out, and it gets captured on that plate that's on the other side of the horse, and that creates the image. That plate creates the image. So the plate is actually the most expensive part of the imaging now, especially in digital. But the x-rays, we can use any x-ray machine or generator on any of those plates. The plates make the difference on what the x-ray looks like in the final say or the end result. And it shoots through and it captures bone outlines. And in the digital world, they have algorithms that create it digitally for us onto a laptop within about 4 seconds, which is really the beauty of the digital at the farm. Now, there's a third one called computed. The first one is the old conventional ones where you had the plate and you had to go develop them in a developer tank and look at the x-rays at a hospital or a clinic. But the third one is computed, which a lot of clinics have because they have many veterinarians. They couldn't buy $60,000 to $90,000 digital x-ray machines for every single truck. It gets quite costly. So they get it computed, and what it is these plates, they're special plates. They're thicker than your normal x-ray plates. Capture the image, they go back, they put it into a machine, and it digitizes the image. And that's called computed radiography. So you still get a digital image, but you just don't get it right there at the farm. You have to take it back to the hospital or clinic.
Okay. And you mentioned that you used to call them the x-ray machines, or maybe the layman will say x-ray machine. Is the term radiograph and x-ray interchangeable?
Yes. X-ray is basically the beam that's coming out of the generator, but everybody nowadays has been calling those images x-rays for years. That is pretty much stuck. But they're actually called radiographs. That's the true word for it, the medical term. And that's basically telling you that it's a graph of the radiation image.
Okay. So when do you get out your generator, your x-ray machine? What kind of injuries lead you as a vet to recommend that kind of diagnosis?
Well, in the lameness exam, which a lot of people have been involved with, unfortunately, with their animals or their horses, in a lameness exam, you're looking at a horse trotting back and forth, under saddle, in a circle, all that, and you come up with a limb that has an issue with your nerve blocks to localize where the issue is, meaning is it high, is it low, is it around the hock, is it around the fetlock, is it in the foot? And then once we localize it, then we take an x-ray or a radiograph of that area because we can't x-ray the entire body. That would be quite costly for the client. So you localize where the problem is, and then you take a radiograph image of it and look at that to determine possibly is there a bony or joint problem. And if that doesn't give you enough information, of course, then we step up to ultrasound and then to MRI and then nuclear scintigraphy. It depends on the case. We don't just take one x-ray. Even nowadays with Founder, we used to just take one x-ray to see if the coffin bone has rotated in the foot. We now take two front to back because we've seen that sometimes the coffin bone rotates side to side as well as front and back. So it's always a minimum of two images. That's the rule that's taught in medical, dental, and veterinary world. You need two images to really get a good view of that area you're looking at to see it in a 3D view because it's a flat picture and you're only getting a 2D view. If you take another picture, you get more of a 3D view to kind of see the bone all the way around. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so every time that thing goes off and another image is shot, it adds up in my head like I'm calculating how much the bill's going to be at the end.
Right. I mean, most of the time when you're trying to get a quote for a lameness exam, you should at least consider 2 to 4 x-rays or radiographs taken of your horse's injury site. Some people will have hock x-rays done on a pre-purchase. It's really best to get 4 images of the hock because it gives you a complete 3D view all the way around. Every surface of that hock is looked at very closely in a 4-view world. If you get only 2, you might miss something. And if you're trying to do it as a cursory exam, the usual standard is 4 views of the hock and 4 to 6 views of the foot, depending on how much they scrutinized the navicular bone and things like that. So,
when you're taking the radiographs, what parts of the horse can you shoot? Because you mentioned the hock and the hoof and the leg. Is there anywhere else that you can use radiographs to diagnose problems?
That's a great question. Yes, we are limited in the field, as field veterinarians, to basically the limbs, the neck, and the skull. And sometimes the neck not quite so well, depending on how good our generator is. So you might see your veterinarian pull out this thing that looks like it came back from the 1950s. Those still work. They just don't have enough power to shoot through a neck or a skull sometimes. But they do great for the feet and the hocks and that kind of thing. But the generator itself has got to have enough power in it to exude enough energy radiation out to be captured on that plate. And so it all depends on what they have in the field, what they can take. But once you get to lungs, that's done usually at a hospital or university setting, and not necessarily can they get all the lung fields on these big warm bloods. Could they get the entire lung field? But they can get a good amount of them. The dorsal spine area of a horse is very hard to get, especially the very flat across draft horse types and draft horse crosses. You can't really get enough energy to shoot through all that muscle mass to get an image of the bone, because you need the x-ray plate really right up against the bone. And then the pelvis is the other key area that's hard for us to x-ray. They've done some under anesthesia at the hospitals and clinics and universities where they can take an x-ray of the pelvis once they're under anesthesia, but it may not be a good picture because there's so much muscle mass.
And so when you do take images, do you ever seek second opinions? Like, is there a specialist who reads equine radiographs? I know, you know, in human medicine, lots of times they go off and then come back with a report.
Yeah, the human medicine is wonderful because everything's in the clinic. Nothing's mobile, except for the ambulance, but the ambulance doesn't have a radiograph machine. And so they can, what they do is they pop it into what we call a PAC system, which is an off-site storage system of your digital images nowadays. Whether it's computed or digital x-rays, they can store them off-site. So they just put it in this PAC system, notify the radiologist that case number whatever has been shot and we need your readout. And they read it out, then they put their, they type their readout into the slot, and then the doctor that called for those radiographs can look that up underneath the PAC system and get the actual readout. So your general doctor doesn't read the radiograph. It's actually a radiologist that reads it. Now, we do have radiologists in the veterinary world, and they do go for the extra specialty and what we call diplomat status, where they get more letters behind their name, to earn the degree of a radiologist. But they're primarily used more in small animal, and small animal has more of a referral system. In equine, I have sent off skull radiographs to be looked at because I don't see those every day. There's the obvious in some of the skull radiographs, and I've seen enough of them to diagnose quite a bit. But if I have any doubt, I definitely send off skull radiographs. That's usually a common thing to send off. And sometimes the neck images are common for some of the young practitioners to send off. They can take the x-ray, they can do the technical part, but the actual reading out of it may be a little difficult for them, so they could send those off. And a lot of times they'll send them back, especially new graduates, to the radiologist that taught them, so they send them back to the university where they came from. And there's probably a $50 fee, maybe $75 now for that, for a radiologist to formally read it out and send you a written report, which is nice to have because then you've got something in black and white in case there's any kind of issue down the line. So it's worth the extra $50 to have it read out sometime.
Okay. And so when we're out in the field and we're holding our horse and the radiographs are being taken, you know, there's a certain amount of radiation, right? And so
exposure, yeah.
Yeah. So how should horse owners make sure they're protected? Like, is it the vet's responsibility to give them an apron, or is it your responsibility as the horse owner to go, oh, wait a second, I think we're doing radiographs, maybe maybe I should have an apron on, or is that necessary?
Yeah, it is necessary to have. The ambulatory radiograph generators that we have don't have that large of a spread, but there is a bit of a spread of what we call scatter beams that are coming out. And so it's good that everybody within a 9-foot radius, is the generalization they say, has lead on. And the minimal amount that's actually in the beam, like the gloved hand that's holding the plate, it's best if you don't even have to have the gloved hand. If you have an extension arm and then a glove on that extension arm, that would be better. Sometimes horses don't appreciate all that extra metal around them, so it comes down to a safety issue of positioning a person's body up against the horse with just a plate seems to work better, but you are exposing that person, even with lead on, you're exposing them to extra radiation. As long as the lead is working, it should keep it from penetrating their skin, and they can get issues from that. Usually the big thing is stand behind the person holding the generator, whether it's a technician or the veterinarian holding the generator, standing behind them would always be best because it's less scattered. Being right in the direct angle of the beam is not really a good idea.
Okay. And so I have to ask, what's the craziest thing you've seen on a radiograph?
Let me just jump in here and just tell you that this answer is incredibly different depending on what type of doctor you ask. I'm hoping that it's not going to be at all like when I ask a ER doctor what was the weirdest thing they saw on a radiograph. I'm hoping your answer is going to be a little bit different, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, it was clearly you could see it from the outward part of the horse, but I don't think I could describe it very well. We had a horse, and I had to have the farrier come out. I couldn't even describe to the farrier what I was looking at, and this is like 7, 8 o'clock at night, because I got to call at 6 or 7 when they were feeding. This horse had lost its shoe, and I'm not even sure if it's lost its front shoe or its back shoe, but it was entangled on the foot on the back shoe, the back foot. And it was in such a position that one side of the horseshoe, because it was a regular-sized horseshoe, was in the coronary band. And the other one was kind of coming around the inside of the leg and was tucked very tight into the sulci next to the frog. Are you getting this at all?
Yes.
So I had to take an x-ray to see how deep into the coronary band it had penetrated.
How did it do that?
If it had penetrated at all, then how deep in the sulci it had penetrated, if it had penetrated at all. Now, granted, we take pictures of nails up in the feet. You know, they step on nails, and that's a big, big, big problem in horses. Taking the nail out before you have the vet out is always a bad idea because it's kind of good to see where that nail went. Now, if you have to haul the horse to a facility, you'll probably have to take it out because you don't want to make the nail go in any deeper. But if you keep the horse still and it's near an x-ray outlet, then you could probably get it done. But this was so unique. I have no idea how the shoe got on there. And the thing I was trying to tell him, I was trying every bolt cutter I could think of on my truck to get this thing cut in half so I could take it off, because you could not manipulate it because the horse was very painful. Even sedated and blocked, I was worried about pushing it further into the coronary band or more up into the sole of the foot. So all I wanted to do was cut off at the very toe of the shoe and then take the two pieces apart, and I couldn't get it done. So I finally called the farrier who had and it was a steel shoe, of course, who had a blowtorch cutter and a grinder, and he was able to cut it off. We took it off in two pieces, but it was the most interesting emergency I've ever seen in my entire life. And when I was trying to describe the farrier, he goes, "Did he just twist the shoe, step and twist?" And I go, "No. It's not on the bottom of its foot, except for the one part is sticking in the sulci, and the other one's coming around the side of the wall and up into the coronary band."
It's like I feel like I have a barrier nail underneath my fingernail right now. That thing.
Yeah, my toes are curling a bit on that one.
It was, and that poor guy was painful. It did not penetrate into any deep soft tissue. It was all superficial, but it was just the most amazing thing. We've got pictures. I don't even know if I've got pictures at the clinic. I think I do have them. I don't know where the heck they are to post on our Facebook page or post on your Facebook page for those of the outside of the foot. And I'm sure the radiographs are somewhere in our PAC system. But yeah, that's
ouch.
Very, very interesting.
Ouch.
One last thing I do want to mention, because we get this request all the time, is a lot of places, and we're included, have what we call PAC system or an off-site system where we store our images because of safety reasons, medical records. We're required here in the state of Florida to keep medical records for 3 years, and then after that you can discard them. And so since those images are not hard copied anymore, they're still considered part of the medical record. So we'd always get the comments back in the old days when we made films is, "I paid for those x-rays, they should be mine." Or I'd get a new client saying, "Well, I had x-rays taken with another vet, but they never gave them to me." Well, those are part of your medical records, and that's even true in the human world. So they have to stay with the hospital and the clinic that that it was generated at for a minimum of 3 years, at least in Florida, those images can be made, copies can be made of those. And just like you would in your medical record world, if there's copies made, there's usually a fee with it. So I just wanted to pre-warn everybody that, yes, you paid for radiograph, but you actually paid for the service, and the service was taking the images and reading out the images. And some places will charge a lower fee for taking the images, but they also have a radiograph review fee of reviewing the images, which may include a consultant reviewing it, or it may just be the veterinarian taking, you know, the chance to look at it.
Yeah, but the horse owner then doesn't actually own those images.
Right, it's part of their medical records. They own it because it's part of their medical records, but if they actually want them physically, there's always a fee to burn a disc or email it to them, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Well, ladies, this has been fantastic. We are at the end of our show. So, you guys, this has been great information. If anybody has any questions, obviously you can go to thehorse.com or floridaequine.com and find Dr. Jones there. And you guys, thank you so much. We'll talk to
you
next week.
Thank
you. Take care. Take care.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, guys. And Glenn, that's it for the show today. Are you there? Did you?
I'm here, but my sound is crap. So you finish up. We'll be back Friday.
We will be back. Well, you'll be back on Friday with Darlie, who's going to be here. But I will not be here because I'll be heading to a horse trial. So everybody have a great weekend, or great rest of your week and weekend. And I'll talk to you again Monday morning. They'll be here Friday. Spay, neuter, and geld. Hit the button.